Free agent frenzy right around the corner. One of my favorite days of the year, and the buildup will continue through the next couple of weeks here at TSN, TSN Radio, and a man who is a focal point of the coverage joins us now. He is TSN's hockey analyst and our good friend here on the show. It's Dave Poulin. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Morning, guys. It's already become a master's class in math, unfortunately. And that's what it's going to be in most NHL offices for the next handful of days. It's your own math, figuring your own situation out, and then figuring out who's available, and then potentially how they might fit in your team. And the first thing you do when you hear a name is turn to the cap guy and say, can we make it work? So that's what it's going to be all around the league. And I think there's going to be a lot of movement, and just because there's a lot of unrestricted free agents available and a lot of contracts open, and everybody will try and see how it all fits together.
And I think there's a lot of people be very curious to see where Nazem Kadri, Stanley Cup champion Nazem Kadri, lands. Man, you were part of drafting with the Maple Leafs all the way back in the his days with the London Knights, Dave. And I think with regards to Kadri, you could look at it in two ways. I think there'll be a number of teams out there who'd be thrilled to give Nazem Kadri a big contract. But are those teams of the quality to the point where he can compete for another Stanley Cup? So here's my theory. Here's what I'm hoping happens for Kadri. Sounds like Evgeny Malkin, Pittsburgh Penguins, on the outs. I'm not sure that's going to work out based on the reports that have been coming out. What about Kadri as the number two center in Pittsburgh behind Sidney Crosby?
Well, they'd certainly be looking for one. And it's an interesting, I never found this out firsthand, Aaron, but I think it'd be an interesting question about winning another cup or not chasing a cup to see where you'd sign. And you think about guys late in their career and who have chased a cup, and Marian Hossa, the classic example, you know, a couple times in a row, he picks the wrong team and then finally lands in Chicago. He picks Pittsburgh when Detroit wins it, then Detroit when Pittsburgh wins it,
right.
And then finally lands in Chicago and wins his cup. But because Nazem has won a cup, does that change his thinking? And it's more about a perfect situation for he and his family, and the biggest, you know, financial commitment that a team can make, both in dollars and in term, now that he has won a cup and brings that pedigree with him. So there's two ways of thinking on that. For a lot of guys, and Corey Perry would be a classic example of chasing another cup because he knows how great the first one was, albeit in 2007. And so I think it's going to be, you know, another team that you hear with Washington along the same lines as if Pittsburgh were to lose Malkin is Washington with Nicholas Backstrom, you know, health being, and he's got that hip surgery. You know, that you just don't, you know, so that money's sitting there. So you look at situations where there's, you know, a potential number sitting on the table already. But if you look at Pittsburgh, you'd say, well, it could be a really good fit, but are you going to make more, you know, than Sidney Crosby? No, you're not. I mean, you're just not. Malkin did, but that was a very different situation. And Crosby's at 8.7. You're not making more than him. And the next guy's Gensel, and you're probably not making more than him.
Pooley, when you see Nazem Kadri hoist the cup and then you hear his post-game comments basically calling out all the critics, saying that everyone who doubted me can basically kiss my ass, there's a lot of people that are still upset about the trade that the Maple Leafs made to move on from Nazem Kadri. How do you feel about the whole Nazem Kadri situation, about, you know, people that doubted him and you know, questioned his you know, his integrity for playoff, being available for playoffs, and everything that surrounded his departure in Toronto? How did you feel when you saw him hoist the Stanley Cup with that situation?
Well, you're happy for the person, but in terms of reliability in the playoffs, that wasn't anything anybody else created. I mean, he was suspended three times during the playoffs, most recently for 8 games. I mean, that wasn't something that somebody fabricated, or wasn't something that, you know, that you didn't hold a grudge against a player for something that didn't happen. I mean, the frustration was that he wasn't available in those three rounds for the teams that employed him during that time, and, you know, for those three playoff runs. And so you don't know how it affected a lot of different things along the way. If he were available all the way back to the first time, you don't know how a lot of different lives are affected. So I think that's on his part to say that about reliability, or the exact words that he used.
Liability,
right. Well, he wasn't a liability. He wasn't available.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, and that was all of his own doing. That was no one else. That it wasn't like he was available to a team and they weren't playing in a specific situation. That's what it almost sounded like. Like, well, I was available, but they played me in the wrong role or didn't play me correctly. You weren't available to play. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line in three of the playoff runs. So you can understand the frustration when one of your top players is not available to play, how that impacts your playoffs that year, how that impacts the whole team, and then how it impacts things moving forward. So I think it was probably ill-timed on his part to say that. More effective would have been a big smile and say, this is great. That's all it would have taken at that time. It wouldn't have taken anything else past that.
Pooley, in 2000 and the year 2017, the Colorado Avalanche finished with probably the worst record in hockey that we've seen in a long time, with 48 points. They go into the draft lottery. They lose the draft lottery. They select Cale Makar with the fourth overall pick. And then 5 years later, they're Stanley Cup champions. And if you just go back to how Colorado got to this point, they traded two core players prior to that season. They traded Matt Duchene to the Senators in 2017, and they traded Ryan O'Reilly to the Buffalo Sabres in 2015. And why I want to bring this to the forefront is because we're facing an offseason right now with the Toronto Maple Leafs where there's a lot of talk about making a significant move that can impact this group. Well, the Colorado Avalanche show that you can trade core players and still find a way to have success. And we see in hockey, there's always it becomes a copycat league. Do you think the Maple Leafs look at the Colorado Avalanche and say, well, they've traded some core players. They found some ways to replace those guys. I mean, the Duchene trade brought back Samuel Girard, and the O'Reilly trade brought back JT Compher. We saw the effect these guys had. Do you think the Maple Leafs now move forward and think about even harder to move a significant player in their lineup?
Well, the Duchene trade also brought back Bowen Byram.
That's right, you know, with the first-round pick.
The fourth pick that came in the Ottawa part of that deal. I think it's something that has to be looked at, Carlo. And, you know, when you have situations like Tampa and like Colorado, and the biggest thing, like every general manager in the league is smiling right now because all that we've talked about is the patience that they had on the management side. But within that patience, they made some very significant moves. And so did Tampa, albeit it was Steve Yzerman, not necessarily Julian Brisbois, but Julian was a big part of those moves. You know, the Ryan McDonagh trade with New York, that was a huge deal and a huge shift in their makeup. And the two deals you referenced, the Ryan O'Reilly deal, certainly, but more the Matt Duchene deal. But the fact is, when that deal was made, Carlo, they still had Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Gabriel Landeskog, and you know, Eric Johnson would have been there. They had some really good pieces still in place. And that's, you know, and that's a willingness to take an aggressive step forward. That Matt Duchene, as good a player as he was and one of the top scorers on the team each year, wasn't a fit with the players that you felt could get the job done moving forward. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the core four and the fact that they all play the same position. And that being the biggest problem, not who they are or how they perform, just that the four forwards all play the same position. And that's the challenge. Is into that territory financially. And so now you've got five that'll make up, what, 48-ish million of the cap. And that's just a huge, huge number. Where Colorado got fortunate is exactly what their guys were making through that time and then forward. And Nathan MacKinnon being the primary one because, I mean, he's still on a contract that pays him $6.3 million, which is half, you know, almost, well, you know, a little less than half of what the top guys on the Leafs are making. So the numbers for all of them, for Landeskog, Rantanen is the only one that's up in that stratosphere. and everything else fell into place nicely, and Makar just kicks in. So you need fortuitous timing with the cap, but also to have a realization that core hasn't done it here. They simply haven't. And it's as much because they all the money's invested in one position.
Well, should be fascinating a couple of weeks in Leafland. It always is, but the next 2 weeks in particular. Dave, thank you, as always, for doing this. We'll chat with you next week.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
You too, buddy.
Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst.